Today, land banking is part of the housing problem. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and broad news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I want to unpick some of the drivers which explain why housing is so unaffordable. And it's all to do with land banking and land availability. Housing developers often claim that they're building new housing as quickly as possible for economic reasons, and planning regulations are the limiting factor. So popular is this view that the Parliamentary Inquiry into Housing Affordability and Supply in Australia, the so-called Falinski Inquiry, was simply the most recent in the long line of reviews to look at the link between planning, the rate of new housing development, and house prices in Australia. And similar debates are occurring elsewhere. The United Kingdom's independent review of a build-out inquiry, the Letwin Review, pointed to local council planning delays, alongside not-in-my-backyard opposition, as the prime determinants of high land and housing prices. The planning constraints thesis contends that prices remain high because the supply of new dwellings inaccessible, desirable locations has not kept place with demand, despite the fact, of course, we know that there's a million spare properties across Australia, even as we speak, probably more. The suggested policy intervention is for governments to rezone more land from non-residential to residential uses and at higher densities and as quickly as possible. Removing regulatory barriers, rezoning and investing in enabling infrastructure such as transportation is assumed to allow the market to be flooded with dwellings, depressing the price of housing. Private sector property developers say they will build sufficient new housing to push prices down if they're allowed to, but is this really the true picture? Well, Prosper Australia, an independent not-for-profit organisation campaigning for economic justice, has just released a disturbing report, Staged Releases, Peering Behind the Land Supply Curtain. The report analysed the complete record of over 25,000 sales in 9 sample subdivisions, and they showed that sale rates in those large approved MPCs vary significantly according to market conditions. Markedly higher sales occurred when the market was running hot, from mid-2015 to mid-2017, compared with when the market cooled in 2018 and 19. The rate of sales and hence the rate of new dwelling development contracted 48.7% between the two periods as the promise of supply-led affordability was held at bay. They chart the 3-month moving average sales rate and how it dropped rapidly from mid-2017. However, prices kept increasing, indicating that high prices did not continue to generate new home sales. This market response, which was common across all states and planning authorities, does not meet expectations of many economists and policymakers. It might appear sales are falling due to higher prices, but why would developers keep increasing prices if it meant losing sales or market share? The low supply response of developers allowed prices to increase for another 15 months. If supply can be curtailed in this way, the suggestion is that it shows that property markets are inherently monopolistic rather than competitive, and unlike markets for goods and services, they are behaving in a completely different way. They say while it is not their intention to call out the private sector, they do call attention to the way that property markets operate in reality, which is much different to the way they are assumed in the planning constraint thesis. Their report's aim is to challenge governments at both the federal and state levels to appreciate that significant land supply is not enough to alter the trajectory of runaway land prices. Excessive focus on enabling private sector supply responses as the driver of affordability outcomes actually serves a useful distraction for those with thousands of housing opportunities at their fingertips. Their conclusion, critically, is we cannot rezone our way to affordability. Now, their report investigated the rate of lot sales in 9 major master planned housing developments across Australia, and they said that the government must recognise the monopoly characteristics of property markets a scarcity trap occurs when supply is reduced to rebalance falling demand, such as that price floor is established. It is reasonable to think of such actions as a market failure under standard economic assumptions. A further implication is that the way property owners will be able to vary new housing supply suggests that the costs of waiting and holding undeveloped property assets is a price worth paying. Thus, rather than a policy to focus on density and upzoning, a focus on increasing the cost of waiting to develop could be the right lever to accelerate supply, even in the face of flat and falling prices. Policy focused on supply expects the private development sector to build excess supply, in effect, undercutting their own product. For example, ratcheting up land value taxes to increase the cost of holding undeveloped land can change the develop or delay trade-off. This is a route that needs further investigation. Indeed, it seems that the very opposite is the current policy stance. For example, in Queensland, they provide a land tax discount to develop new housing lots that remain unsold, which decreases the cost of delay. By restraining sales when the market is in a typical state, the increase in land prices is likely to add an additional $194,000 to the average home buyer purchase. And this impedes local consumption, job creation, and wage growth over the life of the mortgage. If there was a competitive market, one would expect developers to increase sales to undercut opponents, pushing prices down. In a reflection of monopolistic power, the evidence suggests sales were reduced to enforce a scarcity trap so that a pricing floor was maintained. This is the market absorption rate at work, reflecting the built-in speed limit on the supply of housing. Instead of over 1 million approved development lots along the eastern seaboard affecting prices, control over so many housing opportunities only acted to embolden a raw market power for extracting further economic rents from the home buyer. This led to $5.997 billion worth in higher land and housing costs, leaving the consumer and their new community, and instead heading towards those who had promised supply would matter. Based on this report, The Age said that the Victorian state government's push to reduce the cost of housing by releasing swathes of land on Melbourne's fringe is being undermined by big developers, which new economic analysis suggests are banking the land, then releasing it slowly to maximise their profits. Referring to three of the land banked programs in Melbourne at Woodlea Estate, Atherstone and Manor Lakes, owned by developers Mervac, Lendlease and the Dennis Family Corporation, the study found that over 9.5 years, only 23.8% of sites released by government to these developers had been sold to home buyers. Instead of land and housing prices falling as more land is opened up for development, prices increased by an annual rate of 5.5% above inflation. This means families buying lots in these developments are now paying an average of $194,000 more for a typical site than those who bought at the earlier stage of the development. Carl Fitzgerald, Director of Advocacy at Prosper Australia, said that more than 110,000 approved sites have been released to developers nationally over the past decade, but only 26,000 sites, or fewer than a quarter, had been sold. The slower the sales, the more developers make, he said. We have been at this growth at all costs mentality for a long time now, and our report shows we could concrete over all of Victoria and still housing prices would increase because of the market power developers have just to halt supply at whim. Some developments took more than 40 years to complete, and across all the sites Prosper analysed, developments took more than twice the period of time promised at the time of release to sell out. Michael Buxton, Emeritus Professor of Environment and Planning at RMIT University, said land banking by developers had been a problem for decades. The government makes available a large amount of land in theory by rezoning and fast-tracking approvals, but the decision is then left to the development company about the rate at which the land supply will be made available. So a lot of them are drip-feeding land out in order to keep land prices high. Victorian's government spokeswoman said developers were expected to release land for housing after all planning processes have been completed. Increasing the supply of new homes is one of the many factors that help drive down the cost of buying a home, she said. It's disappointing that developers continue to land bank and block the delivery of homes to manipulate the market for profit. At Woodley, on Melbourne's western fringe, large areas sit empty, waiting to be sold. When blocks are released, typically 25 every month, buyers go online to snap them up. But despite the demand, no more blocks are available for eager buyers. Land sales at Woodley are controlled by the developers, property giant Mirvac and Malaysian group VIP. After launching in 2015, Woodley was advertised as Australia's fastest-selling community, and the development was expected to run over 18 years until 2033. However, more than 6 years in, Prosper's analysis of all sales at Woodley, as assessed by the Victorian Valuer General and recorded by CoreLogic, reveals only 25.1%, or 1,652 out of 6,584 lots, have been sold by July 21. A spokeswoman for Woodley and Mirvac disputed those figures and said the development had sold about 60% of new home sites and had about 700 homes under construction. The average sales rate at Woodley is above what is achieved at similar projects. So the scale, she said, we aim to release new home sites as quickly as possible, but this is reliant on a number of factors, including authority approvals, delivery of critical infrastructure and services, supply and labour capacity, as well as market demand. Prosper's analysis of sales data from Atherston in Melton South found that after 9 years of development, 69.51% of lots remained, and the total price gained for an average lot was $123,907 during that time. According to developer Lendlease, as of January this year, Atherston had sold 63% and settled 54% of total residential lots. Ann Jolick, head of Victoria Communities at Lendlease, said Atherston was a top performing community. We have brought forward the delivery of many lots year on year to meet the strong market demand and to deliver more housing to meet Victoria's critical supply shortage, she said. Prosper's analysis of Manor Lakes near Werribee found that after 16 years of development, 43.31% of lots remained, and the price gain for an average lot was $251,059. One other observation I would make is the strong alignment to mortgage stress, with many of these high-growth areas showing up in our reports. Prosper said Australia needs to consider third market housing models such as community land trusts, which are housing developments with community and affordability in the forefront rather than shareholder responsibilities, alongside good old property tax reform. Developers are saying they can finish a master plan community in 20 years, but they are averaging out about 40 years across our study. We need to slowly ratchet up land taxes so that by the 10th and 15th year, it becomes less and less profitable to hold real estate to ransom. What is most disappointing is the complete lack of oversight from government at all levels. It was endemic of the political mindset to find not one public official had questioned what goes on behind the land supply curtain. The quotes by both Stockland and Lendlease could be summed up as cognitive dissonance, they said. We don't hang on. What to what we buy? No, of course not. One other factor to consider is that financiers make so much easy credit out of rising land values, but appear unwilling to allow prices to meet the market when required without great cost to the developer. Responsibility and accountability are the cornerstone of our social contract, and yet we see it sorely lacking for the nation's largest asset base, land. Instead, first home buyers are lured into MPCs under the false premise that supply is the key to their dreams. The reformed National Housing Supply and Affordability Council must take into account the strategies that play out behind the land supply curtain so that a balance can be achieved between private profit and public interest. Properties and assets and land banks are patiently managed and development projects are timed to maximise overall returns. In 2017-18, for example, MPC developers reported concerns of stock overhang to investors, indicating that they were able to sell more but were unwilling to reduce prices to do so. Instead, major developers preferred to wait for market conditions to improve. This pricing and sales response reflects an astute result for shareholders and financiers at the cost of public policy expectations. And they make the point that governments and consumers do not enter this market with the same access to information. The development industry is increasingly serviced by a sophisticated prop tech industry and its platforms, algorithmic analysis of trend data, including auction clearance dates, days on market, listings over time, regional supply, pricing and demographics, to name a few. Public officials would benefit from a more complete understanding of what is going on behind the land supply curtain when in meetings with developers over inclusionary zoning or works in kind. And further, if we are really to understand the importance of supply, consumers should be entitled to witness the size and timing of stage releases with regards to housing affordability. And also, the privatisation of property data has created a significant barrier to analysis, undermining the ability of housing researchers to calculate the public policy returns of decades of rezoning. This must improve. With better data, society may well decide that new tools are needed to incentivize supply delivery instead of land banking. So this is a very important discussion because it really does get to the heart of what's going on. Land is available, but it's not being sold. That keeps prices high. Information is being withheld, and that is creating difficulty in making good decisions. And governments, both at a federal and state level, seem to have walked away from the accountabilities here, while financiers are benefiting from bigger loans to developers as they hold land in the bank until prices improve, knowing a profit will come later. And that, of course, comes to the fundamental conclusion that housing affordability is not really a supply-side problem in terms of not enough availability. There are already 1 million properties spare, as I said previously. And this, to me, again, shows the complexity around housing affordability and how the powers are unequally weighted in favour of the big finance companies and also the big property developers. And by the way, both federal and state governments also benefit from those large organisations and their influence. No wonder we're having difficulty sorting out housing affordability. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.